It's 4 hours universal time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Death toll climbs in Nepal earthquake disaster. Residents of Nepal's capital, Kathmandu, are seeking refuge out of doors, fearing recurring aftershocks from the 7.9 magnitude earthquake that rocked much of the region Saturday. More than 3,200 people were killed and several thousand others injured. The death and injury tolls are expected to rise. The quake struck 80 kilometers northwest of the city, destroying large parts of its historic center. Matt Darvis is a coordinator for the aid group World Vision.
It's unbelievably difficult. At the best of times, these villages are very hard to access. They are dirt roads that are only four-wheel drive accessible. They are used to multiple landslides each year, any of which can shut down a road straight away and leave a village completely isolated. These villages are literally perched on the sides of mountains and cliff faces.
The United States pledged an immediate $1 million for disaster relief and activated an elite Virginia-based earthquake rescue team. India, China, Germany, and Israel are also among the countries sending disaster personnel to the area. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry will be meeting today with his Iranian counterpart in New York for the first time since a deal was announced 4 weeks ago to move forward on a comprehensive agreement to curtail Iran's nuclear program. The meeting between Secretary Kerry and Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif will take place on the sidelines of the 2015 conference on the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty at the United Nations. In Togo, they're counting ballots from Saturday's presidential election in a vote expected to see President Faure Gnassingbé remain in power. The Independent National Electoral Commission has 6 days from the end of voting to announce the final results of the poll. This is VOA News. Suspected Boko Haram militants attacked a Niger army base on an island in Lake Chad Saturday. The number of casualties not released, but unnamed officials say the military might have suffered heavy losses. The Defense Ministry says that operations are ongoing, aimed at clearing the island of militants. At least 2 people were killed, others wounded and arrested, as police in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura, fought Sunday with protesters demonstrating against President Pierre Nkurunziza, who is seeking a third term. The violence erupted in several parts of the capital as police fired tear gas, used water cannon, and in some cases weapons, to break up crowds and prevent them from entering the city center. Fighting continued through Yemen Sunday with jets from the Saudi-led coalition attacking Houthi-held positions near the presidential compound in the capital of Sana'a. The warplanes also struck pro-rebel sites in Shabwa and Laj provinces. Israeli forces killed 4 suspected militants, whom it says were caught trying to plant a bomb in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. Israeli military officials say they launched an airstrike Sunday on the militants near the town of Majd al-Shams, close to the Israeli-Syrian border. Officials say the 4 were targeting Israeli troops. Rights groups are urging Indonesia to abandon plans to execute 9 convicted felons, including 2 Australian drug traffickers. Phil Mercer has details.
Australians Andrew Chan and Myron Sukumaran could have only days to live. The ringleaders of the so-called Bali Nine, a group of young Australians convicted of drug smuggling, have been on death row since 2006. They've now been given 72 hours notice of their executions by Indonesian authorities, although an exact date has yet to be set. Despite diplomatic pressure from around the world, Indonesia appears intent on carrying out death sentences on the 2 Australians, along with citizens from Brazil, Ghana, Nigeria and the Philippines. Phil Mercer, Sydney.
Greece will resume talks today with its creditors. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras spoke by telephone to German Chancellor Angela Merkel Sunday. Greece is trying to negotiate a deal that would unlock $7.8 billion in remaining EU International Monetary Fund bailout money. A funeral will be held today for 25-year-old Freddie Gray, whose death from an injury he sustained while in custody in the eastern U.S. city of Baltimore became the latest incident sparking questions and protests about interactions between minorities and police in America. Family, friends, and members of the community paid their respects to Gray at a wake Sunday, 2 weeks after he suffered severe spinal cord injuries following his arrest, and a week after he died. How he was injured is still unknown. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, April 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Togolese await results of Saturday's election, but the opposition says its candidate is leading.
I am sure that we are leading, but in Togo, anything is possible. Togo is a special country where the truth is not the truth.
Amorin Alexander is a member of the National Alliance for Change. In Burundi, the coalition against a third term for President Pierre Nkurunziza has called for an even bigger protest today, Monday. Sudan accuses South Sudan of supporting Darfur rebels, but Juba says that's rubbish. And the chair of Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission promises a crackdown on graft.
We understand that the LCC was kind of slow before, did not pursue cases. This LCC under our administration is determined to pursue matters that investigate to its logical and legal conclusion.
James Verdier is chairman of Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission. Some Somali refugees are denying they use refugee camps to train and plant terror. And an angel of the migrants helps desperate Syrians arriving in Europe. Those stories plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Burundi, the opposition to President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek a third term has called for even bigger street protests today, Monday. According to one report, the campaign against a third term also asked parents not to send their children to school and for shops to close as a sign of solidarity. This comes as two protesters were reportedly shot dead on Sunday in clashes with police in the capital, Bujumbura. The clashes began a day after the ruling CNDD-FDD party designated President Pierre Nkurunziza as its candidate for the June 26 presidential election. Burundi's existing political structures were founded on the 2000 Arusha Agreement, which brought to an end the civil war between Hutu and Tutsi factions that killed up to 300,000 people. That agreement says the president can serve no more than two terms in office. All attempts by VOA to reach either government or opposition officials did not materialize. One source told VOA that by text messaging that most of the leading opposition figures had gone into hiding. Officials in Togo are counting ballots from Saturday's presidential election in a vote that is expected to see President Faure Gnassingbé remains in power. But a member of the opposition says its candidate, Jean-Pierre Fabre, is in the lead. Amorin Alexander of the National Alliance for Change party says the opposition candidate, Jean-Pierre Fabre, says he's not sure whether the true results will be announced.
I am sure that we are leading. I mean, my candidate, Mr. Fabre, is leading. And we have to wait until the results have been officially announced. But in Togo, we have been so much surprised by what happened in the past that even until now, we are not sure that the true result will be the one who will be proclaimed.
Did you hear anything on the radio that says that your candidate is leading, or how do you know your candidate is leading?
Yeah, we have some results of so many polling stations, and it showed that we are leading. Let me tell you one thing. These people in power in Togo have never won any election. Never. They get the result, and they say what they want. Never they have won election in Togo. Their father won election, maybe in 1993, because the candidate of the opposition has renounced at the last moment.
So do you think, even though your candidate is leading, that the results might turn out to be that President Faure Gnassingbé is going to be declared the winner?
It's possible. In Togo, anything is possible. Togo is a special country where the truth is not the truth.
Compare this election to previous election. What was different this time around?
In Togo now, you have many, many problems. The hospital, the school teachers, so many people because of the way these people are governing the country. So I don't know objectively how this man can say he can win an election.
So if you knew that, the opposition knew that, why did you decide to participate in the election?
We have to participate. If you don't participate, what can you say? what will you say after? People will tell you that, yes, you made a mistake by not going to the election. So we decided never to boycott anymore the election. We give these people a free way to do what they want to do. We must go and show that these people are not honest.
When do you think the final results will be announced in Togo?
Maybe this night or tomorrow.
Yes,
I just want to let you remember that Mr. Jean-Pierre Farr won the election in 2010, and the election has been rigged. This is the problem of Togo. These people do not consider the election as a fair competition. For them, it's just a formality to renew their mandate at the top of the state. That's all. For them, it's a simple formality, like when you go and fill the form to get your passport. That is how they consider the election.
Amori Alexander is a member of the National Alliance for Change, the party of opposition candidate Jean-Pierre Farber. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. The Kenyan government has attributed recent terror attacks in the country to the presence of Somali refugees at the sprawling Dadaab camps, a claim denied by the refugees. Mohamed Yusuf reports for VOA from Dadaab in northern Kenya.
Kenyan officials and security authorities have called for the Dadaab refugee camps in the country's north to be closed and its population sent back to liberated areas under the control of African Union forces and the Somali government. Kenyan leaders have insisted Somalia's Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab uses refugee camps to train and plan attacks in the country. Mohamed Olo Odoa is a security chairman at Ifo Camp, one of the five camps in Dadaab. He says whoever says Al-Shabaab trains in the camps is insulting the Kenyan government and its security apparatus. He says people in the camp live between three police stations. The person who has said that there are people who are trained in this camp, that is a person who is embarrassing the Kenyan government and its security forces. This is not a place that can hide someone and train militias. Odoa, who is also the spokesman for the security committee of the Dadaab camps, knows that like any other town in the country, bad and good people visit the camps and the government must weed out the criminals. President Uhuru Kenyatta's government is under pressure to do something about the worsening of the security situation. In early April, fighters from Al-Shabaab stormed Garissa University College in northeast Kenya, killing 148 people, mostly students. Politicians from that region have vowed to help the central government with information about militant group activities. Hassan Mohamed, a youth in the Dadaab refugee camp, says Kenyan political leaders are shifting the blame to refugees because there is no one to defend them.
If you are a politician, the only person you can attack is the innocent ones, the ones who cannot defend themselves, who are innocent, who are refugees, who are powerless, who stays in a very muddy and dirty area and very dark area. So as a politician, you cannot say it is me who was behind this, but you have to say there are people who are living under you or under Kenya.
In the recent attack on Garissa University College, investigators revealed four of the attackers were Kenyans, one of them the son of a Mandera local chief, and two were from Western Kenya. Authorities said they believe the fourth was from the coastal city of Mombasa. Some camp residents admit wearing grips in Somalia take advantage of the desperate situation in the refugee camps and recruit young people. Kamil Adan is an Islamic school teacher for more than 20 years in a Dadaab refugee camp. He says the education of many children is poor, and some of those who fail return to Somalia. He says Somalis are people who move freely a lot in and out of the country. It is possible when some people could not manage to get education and decided it's better to go back and join either of the wearing groups in Somalia. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Dadaab, Northern Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 27th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. The chairman of Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission says
Under his leadership, the commission will not just investigate alleged corruption cases, but will see to it that those cases are brought to their logical and legal conclusion, including prosecution. James Verdier says if the commission makes a prosecutorial recommendation to the Ministry of Justice and the ministry does not act within 3 months, the commission's own powers will trigger, allowing it to prosecute on its own the alleged corruption cases. This comes after President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf last week suspended the managing director and the controller of the National Port Authority, Mrs. Matilda W. Parker and Mrs. Christina K. Pele, respectively, based on findings of an investigation conducted by the commission. One report suggests the alleged scheme involves more than $800,000 in fraudulent contracts. Chairman Verdier says his commission began the investigation after it was tipped off by a whistleblower.
It has to do with the management of MPA, specifically the controller and the managing director, paying out sums of money to an expert contractor to remove wreckage from the port of Greenville and to conduct a security assessment in all ports of Liberia. But we got to find out that the memorandum of understanding, the contract was bogus, and certain amounts of money were being paid to an unqualified person for other reasons and not to actually remove wreckage and not to actually conduct security assessment of the ports in Liberia. So our findings show this money of more than $800,000 over a six-month period, less than 6 months, were actually converted for other use, for private uses. And so based on the findings, we recommended to the president that a strong action should be taken to remedy the situation.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what I want to ask you. What happens now? Because it seems to me in the past, when the commission has investigated something, some action is taken from the executive side, then we don't hear anything about what happens again to those people who have been suspended. So are you then going to go after the managing director and the controller in the court of law?
That is the expectation. We are pursuing the legal process. The law establishing the LACC provides that after an investigation, the LACC submits its report to the Ministry of Justice, and the Ministry of Justice, along with LACC, all alone can decide what to do with that report. And so at this point, this report has been forwarded to the Ministry of Justice, and we're hoping and waiting to see that our two institutions can collaborate in terms of pursuing prosecution. The case involving the National Oil Company of Liberia, where the board of directors paid some money out as incentive to some lawmakers to pass an oil law, we announced that we're investigating that case last year. Today, as we speak, that case is in court. Members of the board of NOCAR who took that decision are currently in court facing bribery charges. So we understand that the LACC was kind of slow before, did not pursue cases. This LACC under our administration is determined to pursue matters that investigate to its logical and legal conclusion. You will also know that if the Ministry of Justice receives a report from the LACC and does not act on those matters for 3 consecutive months, the LACC prosecutorial power is triggered. And so the LACC can on its own prosecute those matters as well.
Mr. Chairman, talking about the board of directors of this oil company and now the National Port Authority, there are some people who say, why is the Liberian government paying money, or these different parastatals paying money to people who are already being paid by the Liberian people as government officials? Why are they on these boards and receiving money at the same time?
This is a matter that we are investigating. We are looking into, because we also have a National Code of Conduct that was just passed in June of last year. And this National Code of Conduct also prohibits double emoluments by government officials.
James Verdier is chairman of Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Sudan's military has accused South Sudan's government of supporting rebels from Darfur after Khartoum says its troops clashed with the insurgents in part of the war-torn region near the border between the two countries on Sunday. Sudan's Information Minister, Ahmed Bilal.
In fact, many times we talk to the South Sudan government that they should not let the rebels to stay there and to be trained and to take troops and come to Sudan. Everybody knows that. The Justice and Equality movements come from South Sudan today. as they many times they come from there and kill people and loot them and make chaos and these things. Today, a big motor took place there and we destroyed many of their cars, killed many of them. I'm very sorry for that. And we hope if the government of the South of Sudan cooperates with Sudan, because we are not hosting here in Sudan any sort of movement against the South.
But the South Sudan government has also accused your government of supporting rebels fighting against the government of South Sudan.
Yes, they are saying this. Many times they are talking about this. I assure you, we told them that we have to make join forces in the border. We told them that they can come to Khartoum and to come to Sudan if they can find any one of the rebels there. We are not supporting them. This is true.
Ahmed Bilal is Information Minister for Sudan. The South Sudan government has denied supporting any Sudanese rebels. Colonel Philip Agua is the military spokesman for the South Sudan government.
When South Sudan became independent, Darfur has been in conflict with Khartoum. Khartoum, on the other side, after the independence, we have evidence of all the militia forces that have been supported by Khartoum. And they came to the south with different equipment, tanks and artillery. And these militia had been integrated into South Sudan forces. They had been staying in Khartoum for more than 15 years. If Khartoum have an evidence that South supporting Darfur, let them present them to the world and see where is that evidence. What Khartoum is doing now is an attempt to justify their support to the rebellions of Riek Machar, that has offices in Khartoum that are being trained in Khartoum and transported to the various areas of operation. This is a shameless attempt to justify an attempt to destabilize South Sudan.
Talking about evidence, Khartoum says that the rebels came and launched their attack from South Sudan's Bahr Ghazal region. They used that as a base to enter Darfur.
That is rubbish. The Darfur rebels are inside the Sudan. They are not in South Sudan. They are in Darfur. They are in Jebel Marra. Khartoum knows them. And they are in northern South Kordofan. That has nothing to do with the South.
Colonel Philip Agua is South Sudan's military spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Waves of migrants are continuing to arrive on the shores of southern Italy from North Africa after their dangerous journey across the Mediterranean. They face an unknown future in Europe. In the Sicilian city of Catania, there is an activist dedicated to helping the refugees on their journey. Henry Richwell is following the migrants' trial through Europe for VOA and met the woman known as the Angel of the Migrants.
Among the crowd of Syrian refugees in Catania station, it is the number of children that is striking. There are babies just a few weeks old. These Syrians have fled civil war, and they've just spent up to 20 days at sea in an old fishing boat. Exhausted, with little money and few belongings, they're about to start the next leg of their journey north on the night train to Milan. They bring with them tales of horror from Syria. Ahmad Anwar Fares describes what forced him to flee his home in Reef al-Sham near Damascus. He says they bombed his house, killing his four-month-old daughter when a block of ceiling fell on her. Fares says he has two sons, whom he immediately picked up and fled. There is at least a friendly face waiting in Catania. Nawal Soufi is a Moroccan-Italian woman known as the Angel of the Migrants. She and her friends distribute baby food and clothes, along with words of advice and encouragement. I love you all. You are my family, she says. God bless you and may you achieve your dreams. Soufi is part of a group of activists working along the migrant trail through Italy, known as La Rete, or the Network. Part of their work is helping migrants avoid being exploited by conmen, as Soufi explains.
In poche parole, cercare di aiutare queste persone a non andare con gli scafisti di terra, cioè con le persone.
On this particular day, she says, a group of conmen offered to drive them to the north for 500 euros each. She explained to the migrants that they have the right to take a train, that the police cannot stop them. Sufi explains why she is dedicated to helping the migrants.
Quindi quello che cerco di fare non è per queste persone solo, è per me stessa.
So she can feel like a human being when she gets back home at night, she says. So she does not feel she is a part of the tragedy. So she does not feel she has the blood of these people on her hands. After setting off from North Africa, migrants often call Sufi from a satellite phone so she can alert the Coast Guard. It's earned her the nickname Lady SOS. Earlier this month, up to 900 migrants died when their boat sank off Libya. Sufi says Europe's inaction is an outrage. Is it impossible that Europe cannot guarantee a humanitarian corridor from Syria, with each country taking a share of these migrants, Sufi asks? Europe is considered a group of democratic countries where everyone knows about human rights, although perhaps now that is only known on paper, because 900 people is more than just a number. The migrants at Catania have survived that deadly journey. Now they face new fears and new challenges. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Catania, Italy.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the University Sports South Africa Athletics Championships in Stellenbosch, South Africa. Sprinter Akani Simbini won the 100 meters in 10.09 seconds and 200 meters in 20.52 seconds. He's surprised with his time in 100 meters.
You know, the heats weren't so good. I couldn't get out the blocks. I was a bit rusty. Same with the semi-final. I was a bit worried for the final. Going into, you know, the final, I just told myself I was going to run. I'm going to run and just do what I can and, you know, just keeping relaxed. And that's what I did, and it showed with the time.
Coming back from last year's injury, you are now 700th of a second away from your personal best of 10.02. I'm sure that you are well ahead of your target plan of breaking the 10 second.
If I can run 10.09 right now, I'm pretty happy because it's the beginning of the season. And, you know, as time goes on and, you know, the months go on, I hopefully get faster and get closer to that sub 10.
That was South Africa's Akani Simbini, the South Africa University Athletics 100-meter and 200-meter champion. Meanwhile, Africa Junior Triple Jump bronze medalist Zinzi Chabangu improved her South Africa Junior record with a leap of 13.18 meters. She attributes her unexpected success to team effort in training and competition with her cousin Patience Nchingila and Catherine Makaya, who are the senior triple jump national record holders in South Africa and Zimbabwe, respectively.
Honestly, I didn't expect it because I was tired from SA Seniors Varsity Athletics, and this today wasn't expected.
The fact of the matter is that you were competing with your cousin, Patience, who's the national champion, and also your other training partner from Zimbabwe, Catherine Makaya. Did that have an effect on the quality of your competition?
Yes, it did a bit because we motivated each other to go further each and every jump.
Now, of course, you've got the SA Opens, and of course, you still have to qualify for the World Student Games. Any thoughts about that going forward? You've got about 2 weeks.
Yes, hopefully I get where I need to be by that time. A 13.3, if I get that, then I'll be very happy. And of course, it'll be another South African junior record.
That was South Africa's Zinzi Chabangu, the Africa Junior Women's Triple Jump bronze medalist, speaking in Stellenbosch. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ulmer in Stellenbosch, Western Cape Province in South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, April 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shrike, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Button in Washington saying have a lovely day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, from recent xenophobia attacks of foreign nationals in South Africa, 200 feared dead after a migrant boat sinks off the Libyan coast. We'll take a look at the plight of immigration on the continent and the challenges African immigrants face as they seek a new opportunity in a new land. That's next time, Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Next on Let's Talk. Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing music in Africa. This light hearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. This talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.